best cowboy's hat.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. Text us. Lots of text to get to here, but the intriguing story of the day, I just gauging public reaction to the dust-up between, it looks like, soon-to-be former Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine and Mayor Sandy Stimson slash Barber slash whatever. Anyway, enough of that. Joining us now, however, a completely different subject. Running for the 2nd Congressional District here in Alabama for the Republican nod, Dick Brubaker. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. It's a beautiful day. And just out campaigning, trying to bring it home.
Well, it's right. We're headed to the last few days here. And, I mean, you've done this somewhat before, I guess, having served in the legislature and ran for that office. But walk us through kind of the daily routine with just a handful of days left.
Well, you get up early, go to, I'm on my second breakfast meeting right now with groups of voters. I will be heading down to Conecuh County this afternoon and going to a couple of events there. Then if my appointments don't change, I'll end up in Russell County for the about 7 o'clock tonight and then drive back to Montgomery and do it all over again on Friday.
Well,
it's been fun. I mean, 13 counties is a big district, but Alabama has great people in it. I mean, it has been so great coming to your community and just, it's just amazing. You go to a small town, Alabama, and you meet these, almost everyone in government in small town Alabama are essentially volunteers. And they are holding these communities together, and it's just great to see.
How are you feeling about it? Polling's all over the place. You seem to think you got a pretty good upper hand here, but what's the...
I don't believe on a runoff, when you have turnout as low as it's expected to be, the polling's worthless. I mean, when you get... You got a projected turnout. If it gets below about 13% or 14%, it's anybody who relies heavily on polls isn't paying attention because there's no way to sample it, if you know what I mean. So I am just going to keep pushing hard. I mean, we have endorsed, you know, Ken Paxton endorsed me yesterday. He's the Attorney General of Texas, number one guy on the border. Ken Paxton endorsed me yesterday. Lee Greenwood, Veterans for Trump, General Mike Flynn, Eagle Forum, National Right to Life. It's just great to see reliable Republicans and reliable people from President Trump's campaign getting behind my candidacy and realizing that, you know, there's only one person in this race who has the experience and the knowledge to adequately represent District 2, and that's Dick Brubaker. And for all the people who keep calling me and telling me I need to go negative and start slandering my opponent, I'm just not doing it. It's what's ruining politics, and I'm not going to be a part of it. But one thing that I think my opponent's campaign has shown, anyone who follows politics knows that the charges that she makes against me just aren't true, which shows that she's willing to lie to get what she wants. And I'm not willing to slander anybody to get a political office.
Well, back to sort of the late stages of the campaign question here, and you mentioned the low turnout. And I'm kind of curious, like, to give away too much here, but the strategy is, it really is kind of a ground-level retail politics.
Yes, absolutely.
And it looks like you've, I'll say this, my observation, I think you've kind of won the air war. I mean, I see you're on, and I don't like your ads and that may not be as important in a low turnout event as such as this would be.
Oh, I completely agree with you. We've knocked on 12,000 doors in the last week. If that tells you anything about the way we're approaching this.
What's it like? Tell me this, and I'll ask your opponent the same question. But kind of running two theaters, it seems, the Montgomery versus Mobile. I mean, is it generally the same approach? Do you talk – I guess you wouldn't necessarily talk about the same things, but except for maybe the very highest of the federal level type stuff. But are you finding that you're having to, like, kind of tailor two different approaches depending on where you are?
I'm not going to not tailor in my stance on issues, but what you have to tailor to is what people are interested in. Like, if you go to Mobile, I mean, obviously, like, the Bayway Bridge is in the news big in Mobile right now because of, you know, the recent delay. And, you know, Mobile, these infrastructure projects are just absolutely critical if Mobile's going to grow. I don't think there's any argument about that. And so when you're in Mobile, people are a lot more likely to ask you about infrastructure projects, whether it's the port or improving rail access to Austral and to Airbus, than they are in Montgomery. Because, you know, and in Montgomery, even the infrastructure issues are very different. And so while what people, I mean, I don't go to Mobile and take one policy position, then go to Montgomery and take a different.
All right, that's what I mean. I got messaging, and not a position, but just you have a different message. Your stances on the issues are the same, but.
Well, I only have the sense of this. In Montgomery, the people in Montgomery were kind enough to elect me three times. They know me better than the people in Mobile do. So obviously, hang on one thing. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Pollen here is just killing me. So obviously in Mobile, I have to do a lot more. I'm Dick Brubaker and this is who I am, than I have to do in Montgomery. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a more of a get-to-know-you sort of approach than
exactly
Montgomery.
Right.
Well, tell me this. We're talking about infrastructure projects. What should have come first? I know it's hindsight. Should the Port of Mobile expansion or the I-10 bridge been which one should have been the priority?
Yeah, I'm a car dealer, and I'm not going to second-guess the policymakers that know a lot more about it than I do. But I will tell you this, just on the face of it, from, you know, the 100 feet in the sky look, expanding the port is of limited value if you can't get the cargo out of the city. You follow me?
Yes.
And there is no reason to expand capacity of the port if you can't. If the infrastructure leading out of the port can't handle the load. So, I mean, both are important, and given the, and let's face it, some of the port projects that are run by the Corps of Engineers aren't subject to priorities set by cities or even the state of Alabama, like widening the ship channel. But I think I think infrastructure in and out of Mobile it's probably the most important thing if the port's going to grow. Because if people come to the unload in Mobile and can't get the cargo out, they're going to stop coming to Mobile.
Right. And then, you know, but it's been like that for, 100 years, getting in and out of Mobile. And or be it I-10 or even 65, it was just in the 1980s when they finally got it finished. It's always been a struggle historically. And
when it comes to the federal government's prioritizing of issues, I've never understood it. Like, are you familiar with our highway to nowhere in Mobile, the outer loop?
Montgomery, yes.
I mean, in Montgomery, not in Mobile, in Montgomery.
The big flyover between Auburn and Montgomery there, as you're coming into Montgomery, and you're like,
yeah, it's
what
crazy.
Where that goes? I mean, it doesn't go anywhere.
It doesn't go anywhere. But somehow or another, for whatever reason, the Alabama delegation in Congress decided to prioritize that. It was built, 15 years ago now, and there's still no traffic on it. And so, you know, the mystery of why the feds prioritize what they do, I hope to find out once I'm in Congress, because as an outsider looking in, I don't get it at all.
I mean, because Alabama, I mean, you hear this all the time, Senator, that, hey, we're a state. It kind of prides itself on, bringing home the bacon. And, you know, Richard Shelby's claim to fame is all this that he brings back to the state and how great the state is. And then, like, when you really need the federal government, at least in our neck of the woods, to do something to improve our quality of life, which is getting from Baldwin County to Mobile County, the port kind of came in and they put it on the gas tax, which was really weird. But it is what it is. And like I said, don't second guess it. But, man, it sure would have been nice to be able to get back and forth to Mobile from where I am.
Yeah, but I'm not sure, though, if you frame it in those terms, I'm not sure that's strictly fair because if, you know, the supply chain and inflation within the supply chain was not foreseeable when these decisions were made. I mean, you're talking about decisions that were made 8, 9 years ago, right?
I think the suspension for the Port of Mobile was probably more of a 2019 because it's part of Rebuild Alabama.
Well, even 5 years ago. It's hard to second guess, you know, the mayor and the other policymakers.
Senator, the reason they've halted construction on the bridge is they ran out of money. And, you know, so you can't blame a lack of funding on the supply chain. I mean, maybe things are more expensive, but they never got the federal money lined up like they thought they would.
Well, and the first, I've been at several meetings with senior people at the Mobile Chamber, with the city of Mobile, where there were a lot of city officials that thought the federal funding had been sequestered and was already there. And apparently, for whatever reason, that's not true.
Well, I mean, if you listen
I get to Washington, we're going to have to figure out what happened to that money.
If you listen to Senator Elliott, he would always come on these shows on Friday and say that money's not there. It's sort of a wish casting or whatever. So I think they do, but they just kind of operate on this assumption that it would ultimately come. You'll be all right there, Senator.
Yeah, I tell you, this is ragweed or whatever is just killing me. Going forward, one thing that I have run into over and over again in Montgomery, like you talk about Montgomery and Mobile, is people in both cities looking at funding like it's a zero-sum game. It's not. For example, if Mobile is successful in building their infrastructure and making the port more efficient and larger, that's going to benefit everyone right up the interstate, including Montgomery, that just spent $110 million on a container port. So it's all not just what Mobile gets, Montgomery loses, and what Montgomery gets, Mobile loses. It's not really a lot of these projects, especially economic development projects, will benefit everybody up and down I-65.
Well, I'm not saying that, you know, we should have what we have and at the cost of someone else, but there is this idea that, you know, that this does seem very business community driven, and very, you know, big mule-ish almost to really put this, the emphasis on this versus anything else.
Well, and you may be right. I mean, that's probably fair, but I think that when it comes, I mean, what do you want from someone in Congress? I think people want is somebody who represents their values, somebody that will push for smaller government and keep the federal, mainly, and to keep the federal government out of their lives, out of their kids' lives, and at the same time, make sure that our communities are getting the help that they should get from the federal government. And, like, when it comes to earmarks, I'm not going to take an all-or-nothing approach. I mean, you hear the Freedom Caucus, no earmarks ever, and then some other, even Republicans, saying, oh, I just love park money, the more the better. That's not the way to approach it. What we need to do is, surely as grown-ups, we can call balls and strikes on this thing. We can decide what earmarks are appropriate for federal spending and what aren't. And, I mean, that's the approach I'm going to take for Mobile or Montgomery or, for that matter, for Repton or Chickasaw.
Well,
you know, because there are a lot of needs that... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Senator, on the earmark stuff, like I never understood this. Like it's Congress's duty to appropriate, to spend money, to steer money. And like I would rather, and I've never, I mean, the earmarks, yes, sometimes they get a little grotesque the way they are done, but I mean, as like a constitutional conservative, shouldn't the Congress be doing that and maybe not necessarily leaving it up to the unelected bureaucracy to make these spending, some of these big spending decisions? So like the whole earmark thing has always been kind of a conundrum for me. Like I get where it's coming from, and I see where, you know, the seniority is used to steer earmarks to certain districts, but in theory, it's kind of how it's supposed to function.
Well, Congress needs to reassert itself in all kinds of ways. I mean, we are really living in the age of the imperial presidency. But part of that is the fault of the leaders in Congress in both parties who won't stand up and assert the rights of the legislative branch when it comes to earmarks, when it comes to foreign policy, when it comes to funding organizations like the FBI. I mean, we have got to put people in Washington who aren't there to get along with the president, people who are there to represent their communities and protect people's freedom. I mean, the fact that, I mean, there are a few people in Congress crying out against the weaponization of the FBI against Joe Biden's political opponents, but it's not nearly loud enough. If the FBI can be used to attack big name conservatives, imagine what they could do to you as just a regular person.
Hey,
and that's the danger. And that's what Congress people are not focusing on. I mean, it's a threat to our liberty. I mean, and there is no way to be too upset about what Biden has done to law enforcement in the United States.
Hey, and Senator, I hate to interrupt you. We're a little short on time here, but before I let you go, folks want to find out more about your campaign, find you on social media or anything like that, how can they do so?
You can go to brubakerforcongress.com or you can call me on my cell phone, the one in my hand. That's 334-399-5493. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Senator. Former State Senator Dick Brubaker running for that congressional nomination in AL2. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.